King Saul is on a mission to kill David, but David would be given an opportunity to take out his enemy. What will he do? Find out next on The Balanced Word.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Imagine if someone was out to kill you. You're on the run, and all of a sudden the tables turn and you have the opportunity to kill them instead. What would you do? Well, that's the place we find David in the Bible story before us here on The Balanced Word. David's actions may surprise you, and there are many lessons we can take away from it all. Here to point them out to us, our teacher once again, Pastor Dave Rolfe in 1 Samuel 24.
You can turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 24. As we're working our way through the Bible and highlighting the various important stories that we come across. Now, for this story, I'm going to have to ask you to use your imagination a little bit, just to set it up and to put you in a place where you get what this was like. And so what I'm going to ask you to do for a moment is imagine yourself in a room by yourself, just you in the room. Now, several people are going to come in. The first person that walks in is your first boss, the first person who ever hired you. Remember how excited you were? I'm employed. I have a boss. I have somebody who sees that I have something to offer. So your first boss walks in the room. And then the next person to come into the room is the father of your best friend. And so thinking back on who your best friend was then, their dad, you probably don't know him as well. It's a little awkward. At least I know for me when I was a kid, I knew everyone had dads and moms, but you really didn't want to get too close to them. So that person comes in the room. And then if you're married, your father-in-law is the next person to walk in. If you're not married, the dad of the first person that you ever dated comes into the room. Now it's starting to get complicated. And then next is the person who had your position before you did. So you kind of took their job or their spouse or whatever. So a person in your life who you took their place walks into the room. Next, the person in the world who has resented you the most, just hates you, they come in the room too. And then following that person is the absolute craziest person that you've ever met. Just completely bonkers. They enter. And then finally, the president of the United States. Can't be the same person. And so now the president comes in. Seven people are in the room beside you. What a complicated mess of people, okay? Now, think about this. For David, our hero of the Old Testament of 1 and 2 Samuel, those seven people were all the same person. Saul, not only was his first boss who hired him as a musician, he was also Saul was his best friend, Jonathan's dad. He was also his first wife, Michelle's father. And not only that, he was the guy that Samuel said, you're going to take his job, and everyone kind of knew it by now. And, you know, as an enemy of David, this guy is also the one who resents him and hates him the most. And, you know, not only that, Saul is absolutely nuts. The craziest guy David had ever met, no doubt. And he's the king of Israel. He's essentially what the president would be nowadays, only with much more power. Imagine that mess of people. It's so complicated. It's all one person. And imagine all your seven people turn on you and they all want to kill you. They have so much information about you. They know everyone you know. They've been influenced by everything that's influenced you. And they're after you. Well, that's the situation that David is in. This one man who represents almost everything in his life is after him and wants to kill him. So, as we come to chapter 24, we see Saul pursuing David. Now, David had a handful of men, usually between 400 and 600 guys who fought with him. And to give you an idea of the kind of soldiers he had, back in chapter 22, it says, everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him, and he became captain over them. Now, Saul is commanding an army at this point with 3,000 soldiers in it, just going to chase David. David is holding up in the wilderness, running from him. Because Saul's king, everybody who wants to cater favor with the king is ratting David out. Everywhere he hides, they tell Saul, oh, he's over there, he's over there. So here's David huddled up with 400 really depressed, discontented, broke soldiers. And there's 3,000 elite Israeli troops led by King Saul following him. So in chapter 24, David and his men were hiding in a place called En-Gedi. Now, if you've never been to Israel, En-Gedi is, for me, one of the most beautiful places in the land of Israel. It's in an unlikely place where you have the Dead Sea. It's all the desert, place where the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered and everything. And then you have En-Gedi, this little valley that rises up out of the desert. There's a hill. You can only get to it from the bottom. You don't really come over the top. It's just real rugged territory. But in En-Gedi, there are caves and waterfalls. And it's just on a hot day when you're down there in the desert and you hike up into En-Gedi. It's gorgeous. So this is where, in chapter 24, David and his men are hiding. And they're up there hiding in a cave. Saul comes and he knows he's in En-Gedi. There are only a few places he could go. And so they're fanning out. And then Saul says, I got to go to the bathroom. And so naturally, that's the one place where his men wouldn't accompany him. So he heads into a cave to do his business. And as he's sitting there in the stall, David and his men happen to be hiding in that same bathroom, in that same cave. And David's men are like, oh man, I can't believe how lucky you are. Look what God has blessed you with. Here's your enemy. He's trying to kill you. Let's take him out. Let's flush him. And so they're like all pumped. And David just goes, no, you can't do this. I'm not going to do this. Because I am not going to touch God's anointed. Somehow David has this respect for Saul that he, although he knows if Saul lives, David may die. And he has him outnumbered. And yet he goes, well, I'll get close. And David's like sitting right in the stall next to Saul and his robe is hanging down. And he cuts the hem of his garment off. Just cuts a little V in his garment as a souvenir and doesn't say anything. So Saul flushes, leaves the cave. Then David and his men end up leaving and they get up on a hill a ways away. And David starts to cry out to Saul. And if you read the chapter, it says that David laid down there. And in verse 8, David got up after him, went out of the cave, called to Saul, saying, my lord the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed down. Wow. And so it says there in verse 9, David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of men who say, indeed, David seeks your harm? He goes, how come you believe people who are telling you that I'm a threat to you? I'm not, and I can prove it. Look down at the hem of your garment. And he looks down, and he sees there's a little slit cut out of it. And David says, you recognize this? I have the hem of your garment. I was right there. And as you were sitting there reading the Jerusalem Post, thinking you were so safe, I was in the stall right next to you and I could have taken you out, and I didn't, because I have this respect for you. And he says, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. He said, people are telling me I should, and you know it. Man, these bunch of depressed, broke, paranoid soldiers were, get him, get him. And he's like, they told me that. Now you listen to people and you're coming to kill me. I didn't listen to my guys, and I could have done it easily, and I didn't. So you got to learn something from this. And so after doing it, Saul ends up going, oh, David, you're my son. And he's crying, and he's just going, please, you know, I'm so sorry. I'll never do anything to you again. I know that you're going to become the next king of Israel. You're a better man than I am. I'm not going to chase you anymore. So swear to me that you're not going to hurt my family. And David goes, yep, not going to hurt your family. Don't worry. I'm not going to hurt you either. So at this point, it should be, wow. And they all lived happily ever after, because, you know, now Saul realizes, I don't need to kill David. David could have killed me and didn't. In fact, it's more dangerous for me to chase him than it is for me to ignore him. So I'll just let him stay out there in the wilderness, and that'll be that. Well, chapter 25 is the cool story of this guy, Nabal, who was really a foolish man, married to a really sharp wife, Abigail. And after Nabal ends up dying of a heart attack from being so mad at his wife, she goes and marries David, as well as another gal who just happened to be nearby who saw the ceremony and jumped in too. So David picks up a couple wives in chapter 25. And then you get to chapter 26. And again, Saul is trying to kill David. It's so crazy. It's like, haven't we done this before? But everywhere David went, people who were kissing up to Saul would say, by the way, here's where David is, this is where David is, stirring up him against David and his guys. And so again, Saul takes 3,000 guys, goes down, David has like 600 guys with him, and he's trying to find him. This time he's out more in the wilderness, further south and further west. And so David knows it. Somebody tells him, Saul's at it again. And David's like, yeah, I'm not surprised. So this time David decides to just take one guy, and he's going to go right down to the camp at night. And so he takes this guy, Abishai, who was David's probably top general, and the meanest guy David had was Joab. Abishai was the brother of Joab. So he was a pretty bad dude. Later, David just gets sick of their whole family. But Abishai goes, I'll go with you. And so they head down to the camp. And the way they were laid out there in verse 26, King Saul would sleep in the middle of the camp. Abner, who was his bodyguard, would sleep right next to him. And then everyone else scattered out and slept all around them, because that was the safest place for the king to be, sleeping in the middle of his entire army. So David and Abishai walk down into the camp, and it's amazing, everyone's asleep. Not one person is moving. Later we find out that God actually made the people fall into a deep sleep. So, you know, that's what's, they look, wow, these guys are snoring, sawing logs like crazy. So David and Abishai walked right through all the bodies and came right up to Saul. And Saul's big spear was stuck in the ground right next to where he was sleeping, and his water bottle next to that. And Abishai goes, look what God has done. Just like the guys in chapter 24. He's saying, look what God has done. He's delivered Saul into your hands again. You probably should have killed him in the bathroom, but I understand you respected that, but now he's here, armed, armies all around him. Abishai said, let me just nail him with his sword, and I promise I'll only hit him once. I'm not going to have to hit him a second time. The sword's there, David's, or the spear, and David says, no, we're not going to do this. And Abishai is going, come on, you're going to be the king. He's going to have to die for that to happen. And David said, God has plenty of ways of killing him. God can take him out by an enemy killing him. God himself could kill him. All sorts of opportunities for this to happen. But I'm not going to be the guy who touched the Lord's anointed. I'm not going to be the instrument that will on my own fulfill that which has been prophesied is going to happen to me. If I am going to be the next king, I want it to be because God did it, not because I made it happen. So no, we're not going to do it. But he said, grab his spear and his water bottle and let's get out of here. So they took him and they left. And Abishai's like, gosh, it's hard to help this guy. So they go over a ways away on a hill over there. And then David begins to yell out to, in chapter 26, verse 13, says, David went over to the other side, stood on the top of a hill afar off, a great distance being between them. And David called out to the people and to Abner, the bodyguard, saying, do you not answer, Abner? Hey, Abner, wake up. Then Abner answered and said, who are you calling out to the king? So David said to Abner, are you not a man? And who is like you in Israel? You're the man. Why then have you not guarded your lord the king? For one of the people came in to destroy your lord the king. This thing that you have done is not good, as the Lord lives. You deserve to die because you haven't guarded your master, the Lord's anointed. And by the way, where is his spear and the jug of water that was by his head? So rather than address Saul directly, David calls out and to his bodyguard and goes, you're not doing your job, man. Somebody, you're supposed to be protecting the king, the Lord's anointed. And somebody was in there, and at least one of them wanted to kill him. And you weren't doing a thing about it. And by the way, where's his spear and his water bottle? And Abner was obviously disgraced and embarrassed. In those days, if you were the bodyguard to a great leader, you'd be killed if their life was endangered. So David calls this out, and by this time Saul jumps in. He recognized David's voice, and he's like, oh, my son David. How crazy, but David always called him his father because he was like a dad to him. You know, some of you have dads that you can understand that. And so Saul is again like, oh, I'm so sorry. I won't hurt you anymore. And David's like, why do you keep listening to people? If I wanted to hurt you, I just had two opportunities within a matter of days, and I didn't do it. Now, when are you going to leave me alone? Don't hunt me down like a partridge in the wilderness, he says, or like some kind of an ant. I am not a threat to you. Just leave me alone. At this point, again, Saul says, okay, I promise you're not going to pick on my family. And David's like, of course I'm not going to. Your family is my family. And so then he goes, okay, fine. And then David said, oh, by the way, you want your spear? Send a kid over here and we'll give it to him. So the kid went over there and got the spear and took it back. And boy, now at this point, you expect that Saul has really learned his lesson. He should have last time. Unfortunately, we don't know. Saul was such a phony. We don't really know if he learned his lesson or not, because he would end up falling in battle right after that and his story ends. But what we see in these two stories that are so similar is that David reacts. David acts in a way that's totally unusual, something that none of us would really do. If someone was trying to kill me, I would not hesitate to take their life. I mean, that's self-defense. That's what you would do. David doesn't, and it's kind of strange. And it's not that he was some kind of a pacifist. David killed all kinds of people. But in this case, he sees Saul as the Lord's anointed and reacts the way that he does. And it's sort of shocking to his men. I'm sure it was like frustrating. We're trying to protect you, and look what you're doing. You won't even protect yourself. You're acting recklessly. You seem to be so hung up on your relationship with this guy, even though he's tried to kill you over and over again. It's confusing to these depressed, broke, anxious guys that are following him. But David knows who David is, and he insists on doing what he does. Now, a lot of times when this passage is taught, pastors use this to tell people, be careful about touching the Lord's anointed. And usually a pastor implies, I'm the Lord's anointed, because I'm a pastor. So don't say anything against me. And I've heard pastors even say, there are people who have criticized me, and next thing you know, they're dead. They get hit by a car. So the implication is, don't you mess with the Lord's anointed. The problem is, pastors today are not kings. We're no more anointed than any of you who have accepted Jesus Christ. When the Holy Spirit comes in you as someone who has accepted Jesus Christ, you are now anointed. And so if you're going to apply this to today, it's important to realize that when you lift a finger against anyone who God has either saved or plans on saving, you're touching the Lord's anointed, and that's a whole different angle. But in this story, we definitely have to admire David. He had some principles that really motivated him. But at the same time, I think it's important for us to say, well, because the Bible says, the stories in the Bible are all there as examples for us. Every story that we have, every event that was recorded historically, was there and recorded so that we could learn something from it.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. With one of the many lessons we can take away from today's Bible story, here again is Pastor Dave.
Be really careful when you are making decisions based on fear. Fear will never be an effective motivation to tell you what you should do. Now, we all fear. You see someone doing something really well, better than you, and of course that's scary. The real question isn't whether we fear, but the question is that fear going to dictate what we do and who we are? Think long and hard about why you do what you do and why you don't do what you don't do. Don't have anything in your life that you won't do because it scares you. And don't have anything in your life that you're doing just because you're scared. It will mislead you every time. Fear will positively blind you to common sense. Saul was so afraid of David that he couldn't see the obvious. That having a guy like David as a general in his army would be amazing. Having a guy like David as his advisor when he has more wisdom than David, having a guy like David on his staff who's so popular with people, and here David looks up to Saul. Such an opportunity. And yet so often it's the case. If someone gets too close to a powerful person And they begin to take some of their accolades. Right away, you feel like, I got to destroy him. I need to remove him. I need to protect myself. And what you do is you end up losing some incredible assets, and you end up promoting people who are incompetent because nobody's going to compare you to them.
We'll share the rest of this message, David Spares Saul, next time on The Balanced Word with Dave Raw, a daily presentation of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hands and yeah.